Four men. Four men. Masters in their fields. Coming together to pontificate on science and technology. These great men, dedicated to truth, honor, and justice in the American way, are the Gizmo Sisters.
Welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 116. This is Chris, and I'm here with Matt today, and my son Thomas.
What's up?
and, excuse me there. We're eating some Nashville hot chicken while we're recording today. And I sent Matt this huge list of topics, and I said, anything is fair game to go over, or we might not talk about any of it.
But we were just chatting before we started. I think
the first thing I really want to talk about, because we were talking about this, is cryptocurrency. And I don't know if a lot, I think there's this mystique about cryptocurrencies, and that people think that all cryptocurrency is Bitcoin. And while Bitcoin is by far a very popular and very, how do I want to say it? It's worth a lot. Bitcoin
is just one of over 900 cryptocurrencies that exist out there today.
I have familiarity with Bitcoin, with Ethereum, with Monero, with Litecoin, but there's 100 others out there that you could easily Google. But they all share one thing, and that is they use cryptographic hashes to do to determine transactions, account numbers, and they keep a distributed database of all of the transactions and account numbers and currency that's out there, and that's what we call the blockchain. And then, you know, what we call mining is people actually providing compute to do the cryptographic hashing to update the database to say this person paid this person, and those people get a portion of that transaction as a fee for doing the computing part of it. And that's how you make money in, well, one of the ways you can make money out of cryptocurrency mining. There's also exchanges out there, and you can play just like the real stock market. You can, you know, just like buying euros and saying and converting them to dollars, buying euros low, and when they go high, converting them to dollars. You can do the same thing between real currencies and cryptocurrencies and other cryptocurrencies. Like, I'm not sure what happened. I haven't really researched it, but from Sunday night to Monday morning, Monero doubled in price and value. So all the Monero I've been holding has been, you know, it's worth twice as much this week, and it's been steady than it was last week.
Well, what's been interesting about
cryptocurrency is it's now such a big thing. It's still a geeky thing. You know, only geeks like me want to do it. But it's now to the point where, and it's really easy to do. If you have a little bit of technical know-how, you can do it. And there are companies like MinerGate, who you create an account with them, you download their client, and you can pick the currencies you want to mine and tell it how many cores and the GPUs on your computer, if you have GPUs, and tell it mine it. It has its own wallet, and you can mine money like just installing an app. And you know, there's a lot of criticism of MinerGate by the old school. It's kind of funny, by the old school guys who, you know, get in the command line, have these command line tools to be able to do it. And yes, those tools are faster because there's less overhead on the computer. But on the flip side, it's not easy. And MinerGate really, I think, is going to enter the market. And they've been around for a while, but I think they're going to change the whole idea of cryptocurrency, you know, being something that's esoteric to something that anybody who owns a computer, whether it's a Linux box, a Mac box, or Windows box, and run it. There's even a client for Android. You could mine cryptocurrency on your smartphone if you want to. But what I think is important about cryptocurrency is that there's no central bank. So there's no way, and it's anonymous to a large degree. Bitcoin is less anonymous than the newer ones like Monero and some of the other cryptocurrencies who wanted to make anonymity even better. But, and there's a downside to it too. You know, criminal elements want to trade in cryptocurrency because it's much harder to track my illicit activities. And so a lot of sites on the dark web, that's what they use to transact payment. Because you can't say that, oh, this guy's in Cuba or this guy's in, you know, Sweden that you're
sending money to.
Well, unfortunately, the positive is a negative, too.
Yeah.
You know, and that's... I'm a big believer in a free society. Keep it as free as you can keep it, but there are arguments for some sort of regulation of these sorts of things, which is hilarious coming from me, but there you have it. Money is one of those things I take a little seriously.
I do too, but on the flip side of it, you know, the thing about cryptocurrency,
and I think this will always be the case, unless it gets much, much bigger, is that it's a much more volatile market. You know, your cryptocurrency that's worth $80 a coin, crypto coin today is worth $40 tomorrow, is, you know, that's reality. And the reverse is true. Like, you know, Monero was like $45 Sunday night, and Monday morning it was like $85. You know, so what you were holding is worth twice as much when compared to the U.S. dollar.
To be fair, one of the other appeals about cryptocurrency is the fact of, because there's no involvement with a bank, you know, or the federal government. If, for example, you know, more recently Wells Fargo, or not more recently, I'm sorry, how long was it ago Wells Fargo was doing the thing with the fake accounts?
They did that for a while. And they also did the whole lot thing where they pressured people to open accounts so that they could get a certain type of federal bonuses and all this kind of stuff. And those accounts were never used and never had deposits put in them and everything else.
Well, as a result, you know,
because there's no bank involvement, you don't get really scammed by a bank in the end, you know.
Yeah, the other thing about it is it's kind of like the gold rush, too. Your wallet address for the cryptocurrencies, you know, your private key, that's something you have to hold near and dear to your heart, encrypt it and everything else. So if somebody else gets it, they can wipe your account out, because it's like keeping a whole bunch of cash in your wallet.
I have actually read stories about that happening. It's actually something fairly common to a lot of people who are new to this and aren't technologically, you know, well, what's the word for it?
Yeah.
And that's another thing that I like about the later game, too, is they encourage you to enter two-factor authentication.
And what they do is, not only do you create a username and password to log into your accounts and log into your dashboard on the web, because the web dashboard is separate from the client that runs on your machine that does the mining, but your client is also your wallet.
The client is actually probably one of the most user-friendly things in the world compared to, like, any other alternative.
Yeah, very much so. You know, at the least, even on Windows, if you're using the CLI, one of the easier-to-use CLI tools, you've got to know how to create batch files, you know. And today, most kids won't know, you know, if they're not really computer savvy, they won't know how, what's a batch file? You know, but
I guess it goes to my libertarian sensibilities and don't govern me at all.
Well, that's why I said I think it's hilarious coming from me that I want government regulation or of my money.
The one thing I will say is this. It's not
real easy converting your cryptocurrency to cash. You can, and when I say it's not real easy, it's you got to jump through several hoops today. The one company that I think is doing it pretty well is there's a company called BitPay. They have an iPhone Android app, and it is an encrypted wallet for Bitcoin. And they allow you to, you have to have some, essentially $9.95 worth of Bitcoin in your account, and they will issue you a Visa debit card. And so you can then transfer, you convert all your cryptocurrencies to Bitcoin, because they're a Bitcoin wallet.
And they will let you spend that money in US dollars
or euros. Via a debit card that you carry in your wallet, which for me so far that is the easiest way I've seen to get the money out of the system.
Yeah. It just seems overly complicated.
That part is, you know, and when you convert, depending on who you use, like there's several exchanges that there's CoinDish and Changely and a couple of other there's more than that. There's Kraken and Mt. Vox and you know, all of these. Essentially, they're like banks, but they're exchanges. They don't really hold currency, but they'll exchange. You know, like you can go from Bitcoin to Bitcoin or Monero to Bitcoin or Monero, and they'll change it and they charge you a dollar for the you know, a fee for the conversion, which can be as, you know, depending on how big the conversion is, it can be
a buck to several bucks, because it's like,
you know, half a percent.
Well, I mean, I guess your typical average human being at this point is going to treat this more of as an investment as opposed to an actual currency.
Correct.
Because to me, you know, if you're gonna frame it as a currency, you got to be able to come in to Mike's Nashville Hot and be able to pay your bill with it.
Yeah,
and that's
what BitPay is trying to do. But there are a lot of vendors on the internet who accept cryptocurrency. There's an electronics warehouse in Iowa that accepts Monero, and Microsoft accepts Bitcoin on their website. You know, so it can be exchanged for doing things, you know, for services and product, and I think that will expand in the future because it'll be much easier to, it's like PayPal, it's much easier to pay somebody electronically with cryptocurrency than it is, you know, and it's kind of funny because MinerGate has a benchmark to tell you how your machine fares against their average. And you, what you typically do is you can mine solo. Mining solo doesn't get you a whole lot, so you mine in a pool. You find, and that's really what MinerGate is a mining pool for multiple currencies. They have pools for different currencies. And there's a ton of pools out there. And so you share your computing power with them to get greater rewards. Because if you complete a block, which is a unit of completeness of so many hashes and transactions, it will give you an extra reward on top of your fee, you know, to help you get that complete. And that's how they make their money. Because they don't charge you to mine, they don't charge you, but they charge you in two ways, either in transfer fees or they make their money by they get a portion of that block and they distribute it, you know, to all of the users in the pool. But I kind of forgot where I was going with this.
By the way, if that sounds too much like banking, trust me, it's a lot better than banking.
But let's talk about the benchmark. So it benchmarks your machine. It looks at your, and it actually tries, you know, all the different currencies that it supports, and goes through and tells you, hey, you know, your machine is I have one machine that the CPU only, it's got two GPUs in it, because a miner machine can be really low end as long as it has PCIe slots to hold video cards. And from a GPU perspective, machine flies. From a CPU perspective, it's like below average. Excuse me, that was hot. But the like a quad core i3, you know, that's a pretty standard machine somebody have at home, is actually above average just CPU mining. And it'll tell you that you'll make, hey, you could earn an extra $25 this year, you know, with that machine. And it is. I mean, if you think of it that way, when you're, most people don't turn their computers off at home. It doesn't take a whole lot of network bandwidth to do this. Just let it run in the background. Let it run when you're at home at night. You know, if you need to do something where you need all the CPU, you can stop mining for that period and then turn it back on. And but the interesting thing about it's kind of like, you know, cryptocurrencies are open source money. That's how I look at it. The more people who are involved, the better it is. And that's the way, there's been a couple cryptocurrencies that have died because they couldn't get people to mine it. And if nobody's there to do the transactions, then nobody's going to use the currency.
And Dogecoin, anyway?
Dogecoin is one. There's another one. I can't remember what it is, but it's, I think it's Dashcoin or something like that.
There are a lot of cryptocurrencies that I've seen that are, like, just allocated from random 4chan memes and everything, which hopefully by saying that won't get hacked by 4chan or anyone uses 4chan at all, because like the normie has now used our, you know, terms against us. Let's go after them.
But from an economic perspective, I think cryptocurrency is going to be something that, while it's still in the play mode today, there are those of us who are interested in it. I'm playing with it. I have a buddy in North Carolina who makes more money mining cryptocurrency, mining Ethereum specifically, than he does at work.
Wow.
You know, and it's not fun. Rig, you can go out to YouTube and you know, look up cryptocurrency rig or Ethereum rig. And there's all these videos about, okay, this is my rig, this is how I built it. And they will tell you specifically how, you know, what's the best way and how many hashes. A hash is a cryptographic hash. That's hashes per second, gigahashes per, or kilohashes per second, megahashes per second, gigahash, and on, so on. That's how they, you know, determine how much how much you're mining. And they got machines that'll, you know, it's a motherboard with a Celeron processor and 4 or 8 gig of RAM and 5 high-end NVIDIA or AMD Radeon video cards, and it probably costs them, you know, anywhere between $1,200 and $3,800 to build that rig, but they're making $3,800 a month, you know. You know, so I could see where the, you know, it right now, that's why it's I think seeing the resurgence with tech or little geeks, because it's the investment really is not that high to build a rig and then make some real money off of it, you know. And I know some people who have 5 or 6 rigs like that. Because, you know, they build one, they make their money back in 2 months. Then on the third month, they make enough money to build another one. You know.
That's a smart business plan. You always reinvest in your business if you can.
Yeah. You know. My buddy in North Carolina, he got investors, family, but raised like $10,000 and built 2 or 3 miners. You know, is making quite a bit of coin doing this. So, you know, and the other thing is with cryptocurrencies, there's this thing called proof of work and proof of stake. So cryptocurrencies, when they're first building and they're actually creating currency. Mining also creates currency. That's proof of work. So anything you get there, you make more money creating currency than when they switch it to where there's no new currency being added to the pool, and it's proof of stake. Because proof of stake is now you're trading your currency against other cryptocurrencies. Or the US dollar or the euro or whatever, you know, current real currency. I hate to say that. I should say virtual currency versus physical currency. Although the euro and the US dollar are as much virtual currencies as they are. They're no longer backed by gold and silver. They're backed by paper.
And a wish.
Yeah. You know, so I don't know, I just think it's an interesting thing to deal with from both a economic and a, I guess economics and technology it's almost like when the spreadsheet came out, and all of a sudden accounting practices became very accurate because there was a lot fewer mistakes being made, you know, using
this or otherwise.
Yeah.
Yep. As opposed to using the ledger. I remember when I was a little kid.
And this is back in the DOS days, you know, when Excel on Mac, and because it didn't exist for IBM PCs at the time, but Lotus 1-2-3, and I'm looking at these spreadsheets, I'm like, this is really cool, and everybody I knew, that's how they were doing, you know, mathematical calculations like that, and somebody gets out a ledger book, and I'm like, what's that?
What are all those columns and
stuff? You can't write in this thing, that's what I thought. So, let's move on to something I know will make Thomas uncomfortable.
Okay.
Oh, sex God. Robots for the elderly and lonely people.
Boy. Okay. I did not.
I'm not going to really. I just thought it was funny.
Nothing but class here at Gizmo Sapiens. Nothing but class.
So... let me go down here and see what we want to talk about. Well, let's talk about something we both laughed about a lot, and that is Star Trek Discovery is in less than a month.
Uh-huh.
Actually, it's 3 days from tomorrow.
Oh, from today.
I won't believe it until I see it.
So, it's kind of funny. I mean, the previews and stuff look promising.
This is not prime timeline stuff. You can't make a change like that to the Klingons and call it prime timeline, particularly when they look like the Klingons in...
Now, I will slightly disagree with you here, because there was a marked difference between the original series and Star Trek The Motion Picture. Now, you can claim all you want about the genetic whatever manipulation and all that. That just sounds like an excuse to me. If they look cool, that's really all that matters.
Well, I will say this. It'll make the guys doing
Klingon makeup at Comic-Con much harder. Because there's no hair to hide it.
Well, and you know, to be honest, that's probably the point.
Yeah.
You're not going to see fan productions in the Discovery era.
Yeah. I'll never discount that.
Well, I mean, I really wouldn't either, but...
So it's funny, you know...
It'd be a lot more difficult, I think.
You know, like any real Star Trek geek, I've been following it pretty closely.
And, you know, I'm trying to... What really impresses me is I like the uniforms. I like the equipment. The phaser's believable, you know, when you go from... Because, you know, when you have to, when you look at it, it has to be believable that you went from the phase pistol in Enterprise to the phasers in either the new pictures or the classic Trek. And it looks like it fits in there. The spacesuits are really cool. And they look like the... They're kind of like the precursor to the spacesuit in Star Trek The Motion Picture.
So I like how they play the
And the uniforms are kind of a mix between the Enterprise uniform and the Star Trek The Motion Picture uniform. You know, it's a tunic or a jacket with pants, but it's blue instead of red, you know. And you know, I think it'll be interesting.
Playing the captain. Yeah. Apparently said it doesn't matter if the traditional fans come back out for this.
That's kind of what they said for the movies too, though. You know.
Movies.
Yes. Yeah. But you know, I understand the issue. You know, the ratings were not. But as the Next Generation movies kept going on and on and on, they. The fan base who loved, you know, because that we were kind of the last big group of the, from a generation perspective, of the next gen stuff. You know, they're trying to appeal to today's audiences, and you know, as the next gen movies went on and on, they were getting fewer and fewer new fans and even recurring fans because. And I hate to say this, I thought the movies were good, but the stories weren't really all that different. You know, they'd replace one antagonist with a different one who looked slightly different, but it was the same story at the end, you know? And I also think that...
I think you have a problem with that, with like, Next Generation, and even really DS9 and Voyager 2.
Yeah.
Those shows went on for 7 years.
Yes.
What more could you possibly have to tell? I mean, if you didn't tie everything or almost everything up by the end of the last season or the finale, what more is there to tell?
Yeah, I agree.
And you kind of had an out with Riker and Troy going to Titan.
Yep.
But that wasn't going to go anywhere.
No, it would have just been the same thing with the different group, Riker and Troy. And I think that's why they went to Enterprise. And I think we've talked a lot about Enterprise because I really liked Enterprise. Even...
The second season was horrible.
The back half of the first season was pretty horrible. The last season, the third season wasn't... that bad.
I don't care. The problem with the second season, I don't think the show was bad.
I thought the storyline got a little boring because...
Well, it was too convoluted.
Yeah.
You have five races and they're all supposed to be acting together as some sort of Legion of Doom.
Yeah.
You can't carry that out for too long. And you just can't.
Yeah, I think that was the issue with that season.
And
the other thing I didn't think they did well was they didn't end the temporal war well. But you talk about a great ensemble cast.
You know.
And the unfortunate thing is it wasn't until the third season that they really started developing some of those characters, like Hoshi Sato, you know, the relationship between Tripp and T'Pol. They always hinted at it for like the first two seasons, but it wasn't until the third season that they really got into it. And
I will say this, some of my favorite Mirror Universe episodes came from Enterprise.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think anytime you can tap into the history of the show, the better off you are.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
And that's what I kind of worry about Discovery from that perspective. How you do an homage like that is just as important. Because, you know, you can name a character Khan, but if you turn him into a stiff Brit, that's not quite an homage. That's a slap in the face. And that's... I'm hoping that Discovery treats it a little better.
Yeah. Well, you know, the good thing is that there's very little in Star Trek canon that dictates what they have to do. They have to worry about the 4 Years' War. They have to worry about Garth of Izar.
Another thing. How are they going to deal with that? Because
I know. And they have to worry about what went on in Enterprise. But other than that, you know, they don't have to pay homage to what happened in Next Gen and DS9 and then Voyager and, you know... And the fact that they all overlapped, or a lot of it happened at the same time, you know, and stuff. But, you know, in contrast to it, I'm just as excited on September 10th when they start the Orville.
That's going to be awesome.
Seth MacFarlane, it harkens back to Galaxy Quest.
It really does.
And I love that movie. Whenever I want to see something science fiction, but I want to laugh while I'm doing it, I watch Galaxy Quest.
I always call it the best Star Trek movie ever made.
Yeah. What I love about Galaxy Quest, though, it has to be the fact that... Yeah, and Matt and I certainly have experience dressing up as our favorite Star Trek characters and running conventions and going to conventions and all this, but the fact that it starts off at a convention...
Us fans play such a an integral part of the resolution
of the plot. Yeah, you know, that was a movie I'm surprised they never made a second.
Well, they keep talking about doing a series.
They should,
and they should,
particularly but now that Tim Allen's not doing Last Man Standing.
Exactly.
But well, he was unjustly fired, actually.
Yeah. I don't know, you could say that about J-1 too.
Yeah.
But I just think that's... they've got a great cast for the Orville. And it rivals the cast for Galaxy Quest. I mean, the guy who's the Admiral. Seth MacFarlane is the Captain. And I like that a little bit of tongue-in-cheek with my science fiction story. That's what, you know, that it kind of also harkens to Firefly in that respect. Like, when you go to the planet and Jane was the hero, you know.
The relationship dynamic that I'm most interested in watching is between the captain and the XO, who is his ex-wife.
Yeah.
And... that friction should be entertaining as well.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, and the fact that she was also on the event, you know, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You know, she's a decent actress and can hold her own in that environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean...
But honestly, other than the Orville, is there anything else that's exciting coming? Yeah, I mean, Discovery, but...
You know, I, of the two shows that are coming out, the most excited I am is Discovery and the Orville. You know, this year I have not followed the new shows real closely. I watched Marlin, and it was funny, you know, but he's a Wayans. I expect it to be funny in that Wayans Brothers type of way. But, you know, what I've been most excited about is, like, some of these shows that they've pushed way out, that usually cover the summer, and they push way out. So, like, The Last Ship just started.
I was going to mention that. Someone had mentioned that they had just seen it. I've not seen that show at all.
It looks like a great premise.
It is a great show. And they, what's been great about it is a couple of things. They're not afraid to kill characters off. You know, main characters.
Right.
They're also... every year, even though it all relates, for every season, it's like a new story. You know, there's a new crisis. And, you know, and I hate to say this, but over time it's going to get old because everything's always a new crisis.
That's like 24.
Yeah.
You know, you can only go back to that particular well so many times.
Yeah. Well, in the sense of 24, though,
it was supposed to be 24 hours in a day.
It's absurd in its own right,
yeah.
But still.
You know, the other things that are exciting is like on Netflix. Have you seen Defenders yet? I have not watched Defenders, but you know, you have the OC coming back. You have Stranger Things.
I couldn't get into it.
Oh.
I watched the first, three or four episodes of the first season, and I can't do it. I don't know what it is. There's just, I can't do it.
You know, I think the thing that drew me in was the nostalgia for all the 80s stuff, because they were dead accurate, you know? But then I got into the storyline and all of that, and it's pretty cool. And I think it might be one of those that you have to get into or not. The OC was kind of that way. Watched the first couple episodes and I'm like, I don't know, but I kept with it because, you know, the great thing about Netflix is, you know, we're only a few hours away of completing the first season. If I don't like it, I'm
done with it. Yeah.
But then it got really interesting, you know. So it's one of those that you kind of have to stick with.
Well, I may have to go back to that one. I don't know. I've been kind of watching a bunch of other stuff. I watched Ascension.
I watched that.
That one's kind of old, even though it's on Netflix.
Yeah, right.
But what was so I don't like about Ascension was that it ended.
Well, yeah. How else were you gonna get out of that?
Yeah.
Really, I mean, they painted themselves into a corner.
They did.
But I mean, did they get canceled?
Yeah.
If you're gonna end it because you're canceled, you might as well end it.
It was a miniseries
that was supposed to be a series, and after like the first five or six episodes or whatever it was, it got the bad news. It was done. I think it was designed that, you know, so that it could be finished at the end of the miniseries if it didn't get enough viewership.
Gotcha. It seemed like that was like on Showtime or something, wasn't it?
Or something like that, yeah.
There's a lot of adult themes in that one.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But you know, what was the show I was watching the other day? Well, so one of the weird shows, and I don't know why I watch it, but I do, is Younger. It's totally outside of the wheelhouse of what I usually would watch. It's a dramedy type thing, but it's about this woman who gets divorced. Prior to her divorce, she was in publishing, and she then tries to go back out in the workforce. Has a degree, you know, the right degrees, and everything. Can't get a job because of age discrimination. So she looked really young. So she changed her birth date on her resume, and started dressing younger. And all of a sudden, she gets a job, an entry level job, and working her way up in the publishing industry. But nobody else around her knows. Except her best friend, who she lives with now. But, you know, and there's a lot of adult themes in that show, and I'm thinking that's like an FX or one of those, and there's several shows. Oh, the other show that I've been watching on Netflix is Atypical, and that's a really good show. Has Jennifer Jason Leigh, and it's about, you know, the main character's kid named Sam, who is... On the spectrum, the autism spectrum, and you know, his family and how they deal with things and how their life is going, and the big thing is Sam wants a girlfriend, you know, and they're very frank about some of the things, you know, like Sam tells his mom in the car one day, he goes, "Mom, one day I want to see breasts."
you know. And because she's all concerned about him getting his feelings hurt, as you know. And it's been a very enjoyable show. It's funny, but it has a real story to it, you know. But, you know, as for new TV coming out, you know, about the only thing I'm really looking forward to, besides some of my shows coming back, unfortunately Last Man Standing is not, as much as I would like it to. But, like, The Big Bang Theory, and then, of course, Young Sheldon. I don't know that show will last, but it'll be funny.
No, I agree with you. I think if it goes beyond a season, I'd be shocked.
Yeah. But, you know, the problem with TV, and clearly new TV, is everybody's making a movie. You know, it used to be new TV was only what was on the three major networks. And then you started adding HBO to that about, you know. And then we got Fox and what was the precursor to CW that Voyager ran on? The Paramount Network. And then, you know, that became CW. And then now FX. And, you know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry, even WTBS out of Atlanta, has their own new shows and content. And I understand why they do it. They have to. You know, they have, in order to catch the, if you're competing with 130 other stations on cable, you have to compete, or you have to create new content to draw people into it. I mean, USA Network has done a wonderful job of that over the years. You know, it really started with Monk, and then Psych, and then Burn Notice, and, you know, all, I mean, just a string of really good shows. They're in a quandary right now, because they do not have a...
They don't have a big bell ringer.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so much so that they're bringing Psych back as a movie.
Yeah.
Which, you know...
the problem is Roday and Maggie, what's her face? She's been on a ton of failed shows since, you know, one season shows since Psych, you know, but they're getting older. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but he can't act the same character, you know.
I suppose you could do a, here's what they're doing now.
Right? Yeah.
That goes back to the 7 years of Star Trek. You can't come back and then, what are they doing today?
Yeah. But that's always been the issue with the movies. You know, the movies always took longer. Or, you know, and particularly in classic Trek, you had, what was it, 1969, the series ended. There was a small stopgap of about a season and a half of the animated series where the actors, you know, voiced their parts. And then in 79... they had the motion picture, and then what was it, 83 or 84 was Wrath of Khan, and then Search for Spock, and, you know, and you get through that, and it was like every 3 or 4 years you had a segment, and then by the time, you know, I think Discovery, Star Trek VI, yeah, Discovery Country came out, when I was like a senior in high school, and so that's 20 years later, you know. And it's no wonder they, you know, they're getting too old to play the same roles that they were in, you know, no matter what. They would have moved on. At least real people would have moved on.
Well, and that's where you see some development, particularly the younger characters like Chekhov.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine Uhura sitting at that communications panel for 20, 25, 30 years.
That's like when he became a security chief. So,
can you imagine a Uhura sitting at communications for 30 years?
Oh, I know.
No.
Well, and I think that's why, as you know, the classic Trek movies, as they got longer and longer, there was a lot more humor in them. I mean.
Well, you almost had to.
Yeah.
I mean, really. You see Kirk talking about, you know, how galloping around the cosmos is a game for the young, and McCoy's like, what do you think we've been doing for 20 years?
Yeah. Well, even the J.J. movies, or what is the name of the ship that Kirk's father was on? The Kelvin timeline. That's what they call it. It's the Kelvin timeline. even in those movies, and they play, I'll tell you, the last one paid awesome homage to
just the original movies.
I thought so too. I
love that whole scene in the front, particularly after Anton, the kid, what was his last name?
Yelchin, who played Chekhov, you know, was killed, and you know, so they, it was his birthday in the movie, and so they had the bottle and they talked, and you know, that was all filmed post-production because, you know, they were trying to honor him a little bit, but it also honored Star Trek II. You know, and but you know, Chris Pine is getting up there, you know, he's not much younger than we are.
But you know what, though, when you have that sort of physique and you continue to work out and do what he does, yeah. You know, I mean, I saw him in Wonder Woman. He did.
But I'm saying is, you know, how much longer can you do? You know, he and the rest of the cast probably have, if they keep pumping the movies out at the same rate, have 3 more movies maybe in them for Star Trek.
That's what the original cast did, and that was after a 30-year run.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, I think that's still doable.
I do too, but what I'm saying is so, but they have to do something after the Kelvin Cup or Kelvin Universe.
They're going to have to introduce something else if they want to keep that franchise alive, which I think they do. Now, I'm going to segue a little bit.
Okay.
So, you know, you talked about the fan-made stuff, which, you know, that all kind of got started because there wasn't Trek for a long time, you know? And those guys who do the Star Trek continues, I mean, phenomenal production values. The show looks like it was filmed in the late 60s with actually a little bit better special effects. But
I tell you, I've watched the last couple of episodes that they put out, and they are boring as snot.
Really?
Oh yeah.
The one
a couple
where you have did you see the one where
they find the other Kirk who is stranded in the alternate universe and all of that, and you know he trained the computer to be his companion and all this stuff. I was like falling asleep in there. I had to stop it, go watch something else, go do some things, come back, watch another 10 minutes. I just couldn't, it did not keep my attention. Not like watching an episode of Classic Trek.
See now, when I got my DVDs, I was fired up to watch them 70 episodes straight. But you know what? I can't do it. Once you've grown up on Next Gen and DS9 and Voyager and even Enterprise, really, you can't go back.
I don't know. I can watch.
So I can watch all of Enterprise. I can leave it running and I'm captivated. I can pretty much do that with Classic Trek. I can only go back to like season 6 and 7 of Next Gen and still watch the show. Everything before that, I just thought, I'm like, oh my god.
You know, it takes like 3 seasons to get them.
Yeah, well, was it the 3rd season that it was any good?
Right.
But
on the flip side, I can go to Voyager, and I can even start at the beginning, which is a little bit campy, but I didn't realize how good Voyager got, particularly as it got towards the end. And a lot of that production value I can now see went into Enterprise. And
I kind of gave up on Voyager.
See, I kind of gave up on DS9.
Well, and I gave up on DS9 too.
I got tired of that whole Dominion War thing.
I didn't even see the finale to Deep Space Nine until, I mean, that was probably, I got Amazon Prime like 2-3 years ago. And that's the first time I'd ever seen it.
Well, you know, other than Miles O'Brien, the crew of Deep Space Nine, I loved the Miles and Keiko relationship and all of that, and but I had a couple issues with it. You know, O'Brien kept getting the the Enterprise demotion. He started off in Next Gen as Lieutenant O'Brien and ended up being Chief O'Brien. It didn't make any sense. But then on the flip side, a lot of the other characters just did not become that likable to me. I never got into Avery Brooks as Captain Sisko. And I did like Jake Sisko, and I liked the way they developed him, particularly in contrast to the way they developed Wesley Crusher, you know.
But I think that was a conscious choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, they weren't going to have another smart aleck kid save the station every week because they saw the backlash to Wesley.
Yeah. And, you know, they brought Worf on to improve things, and he did. But on the flip side of it, you know, they killed off Jadzia Dax, which was the only other good character in that crew.
Ezri did nothing.
No. No. There was one really good episode with Ezri Dax that I still remember, and it's where she had the sniper rifle, and she got into the mind of the killer.
Right.
You know, and all of that. But that's the only one that's memorable to me. Every other... You know what I liked about Deep Space Nine? Were all the people they brought in who were, like, main characters for an episode. Like, the Ensign Melora, who had to have the exoskeleton and all that stuff. But, you know... Dr. Bashir and Kira Nerys and, you know, I just was not, I liked the Cardassians a lot more than I liked most of the Federation people, you know.
I liked Bashir a lot.
I ended up liking Odo more than a lot of the characters, too.
Because to me, he made things entirely too easy.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is I actually liked Odo in the beginning as a character more than I did at the end. Because it was like he was a character, as far as character development went, he devolved.
Yeah.
But...
No, I would agree with you. But, because you know, he started out with a real moral code that he did not violate no matter who it was or what it was happening. And by the time you get to the end, he had compromised nearly everything.
Yeah, you know, but I just don't, as an ensemble cast of likable characters, they're my least favorite of the group, and not a fan. You know, I probably, even though it's in my Netflix, you know, save for later, I've never gone back and watched it. Now, I'll go back and watch 2-3 episodes of Voyager. I think I'm already back into the sixth season. You know, and I'll watch 2-3 episodes of Voyager, and then I'll not watch it for a week, and I'll come back and watch an episode. You know, and but I really enjoy those. And again, it was that ensemble cast and how they interacted and everything else. You know, and the only complaint I have about Voyager was early on was Kes. What a useless and non-needed character, because they proved it later when they got rid of her.
Yeah, there was a... Yeah, and that was horrible casting, too.
Yeah, well...
I mean, we know that just because we met her a few times and saw what a shrinking violet she was in real life.
Yeah.
That it was...
Well, you know she had... Go out and read her Wikipedia page one day, or IMDb bio. I mean, she's had all kinds of psychotic episodes, and I think she was recently in jail because she was found running around nude and at a Star Trek convention, as a matter of fact. You know.
Crazy.
But, you know, it's just weird. So let's move on to something else. We kind of covered TV and...
Talked about Star Trek. Which is hilarious.
We'll do one more.
What you got?
Let's see. Let me go back to my show notes. Let's do something political. Actually, there's something that... And this is actually something that you'll know a lot about because you're probably kind of involved in it.
Okay.
So, I am totally aghast at the whole idea that Ohio, our great state, actually was doing something correct, and they were trying to fix the voter registration rolls so that there were not voters who were not entitled to vote or were dead. And I mean, and for those of you who don't know, there's actually more registered voters in some states than there are people who live in those states.
So that, you can break that all the way down. There are counties and cities in this country that have more registered voters than population, yeah. And it's not a small number.
No. So if you take into account that Trump won, that is a phenomenal number, because we know that a lot of those extra voters are either not real, they're virtual, they're illegal aliens, they're people who are voting multiple times, which is illegal, by the way.
So there's two problems. One is fraudulent registrations.
Yeah.
And then there's actual voter fraud, where the votes are fraudulent.
Yeah.
They are two separate issues, and so typically when you bring it up, the numbers that get tossed around typically are registrations. Actual voter fraud is pretty rare.
Well, it's that actual voter fraud is probably a little bit harder than to do than.
I'm not gonna say it doesn't happen, because we've even seen cases here in Ohio that are blatant and ridiculous. That these things aren't caught on election day is absurd.
Well, I have a theory about that, which we'll come back to, but just kind of let people know. So the Ohio Attorney General,
Mike DeWine,
was following federal mandate to tighten up voter registrations. They put in something, they and this is beyond generous, in my opinion. They put in something like, and I'm going to kind of paraphrase, because I'm upset by it, but I'm not so upset that I got all the details. But they were dropping people who were off the rolls, who after multiple times did not respond to to the state of Ohio saying that, yes, they're still alive and they still live at this address. And even after it's like three or four times that they get sent these cards over a period of a couple years. And if you don't respond, they still wait another year before they take you off the voter rolls. Well, somebody got it in their craw and said that you can't do that. And we kind of know who those people are, the people who would
take advantage of
it. Yeah. And so now Mike DeWine is fighting essentially the U.S. Supreme Court over whether or not what he did was right or wrong. And, you know... First of all, this is a state's rights issue.
It is.
He's the attorney general of the state. Voter registration is a state issue,
not a federal issue. If it were a federal issue, there'd be
another useless government agency at the federal government for voting.
Not only that, it would be unified. There'd be a unified law across all 50 states, which is not the case.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, if our founding fathers had cared enough about that issue, they'd have put it in the Constitution.
Exactly.
And didn't.
Exactly. Well, and I think that was one of those things where, again, it was a state's rights issue, because they had to determine. So he's doing within the purview and power of his job, and he's following state law, and he has support from the governor, oddly enough. I don't know how good that is. It'll change with the wind here in a minute. But I think that's more than generous to determine whether or not you're still a registered voter in the state of Ohio.
Well, and, you know, the thing that's amazing about that is that if you're taken off the voter rolls and they notify you of that, for one.
Yeah.
But two, you have the opportunity to go in and re-register.
Yeah.
I mean, they ask you virtually everywhere in this state.
If you
want to be registered
to a public library,
I mean, it's almost to the point where you check out at Kroger's.
You go to the DMV to renew your tags. They ask you, are you a registered voter? Would you like to be? You know?
Now, I'm supposed to believe that nobody goes to the DMV. Nobody goes to the public library. And nobody accesses the Secretary of State's website.
Well, how about your local county board of elections. That's how I re-registered to vote when I moved. You know?
It's not rocket science.
No.
If voting is something you actually care about, you go and do what you gotta do.
But I think the scarier part of that is, if this is such a, you know, I
think it is a very generous system here in the state of Ohio. You get like 5 years. You could be living in another country and still be registered to vote and could come back and vote and nobody would notice. Okay?
Now.
But what, the thing is other states, how bad has it got to be?
The Trump campaign alleges that legitimate voter fraud has occurred in seven digits. I don't know how much of that I believe without definitive proof. I mean, I think they're using a mathematical model and extrapolating some numbers.
Yeah.
I would need to see some hard data on that to truly believe that. Do I think it's possible? Yeah, I do think it's possible. Do I think it's likely? I don't know.
Well, it's not like we haven't had voter fraud.
But it's certainly possible.
In the past, you know, back before,
you know, we had even better public or good public records, you know, in the 1800s, late 1800s, we had quite a few cases of voter fraud, you know, where that was where the whole idea of going to cemeteries and, you know, and that was also prior to Social Security and those types of things. But, you know, I almost guarantee you that voter fraud is tied directly to Social Security fraud.
I would certainly buy into that, only because that's one of the things they ask you for when you register. So you got to be able to put the name with the number.
Yeah.
So I would agree with you on that point.
Because Social Security fraud then ends up being tax fraud.
Right.
You know. And
in essence.
So, you know, it's another one of these systems that that ties together. And, you know, what's kind of funny about this is, did you see the movie The Circle with Tom Hanks and Emma Watson?
I'm not sure.
So it came out this year.
Okay.
The idea is that this company called The Circle, and they made ties to make it close to
Facebook and Google. And there was a little bit of Apple in there, too. They were making fun of, you know. But the idea was that The Circle was eventually, you know, there was no such thing as privacy because they had these cameras that, you know, were dirt cheap. They cost as little as a cheap pair of jeans. And, you know, you could put them anywhere and they would record everything. And then they were doing analytics and things. And it went from it being a social thing to then, hey, let's see how fast we can find a criminal that we can't find. You know, and there were all kinds of issues with it. And I didn't actually like the way the movie ended, because they were okay with the whole idea of you don't have any right to privacy, which is a guaranteed right in our Constitution. But they were trying to tie registration to their website to voter registration and voting.
Well, you know, I keep hearing every several years, I hear the cry, why aren't we voting online? And to me, that's the most, you want to talk about open to fraud.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you want to talk about
not just open to fraud, but open to foreign influence.
If I may add, they actually have found a DEFCON that they could easily just break into voting machines very easily with hacking, so.
Well, the voting machines are bad enough.
Oh, yeah.
In my book.
Absolutely.
They really need to encrypt those voting machines and make them, just don't hook them up to the internet in general. Just have it output a, you know,
it doesn't matter.
Poll in the end where it actually shows not only how many people voted, who those people are, but also pretty much just show the total numbers from each individual machine, and then they tally it up in the end.
The problem is if I have physical access, I can walk into a voting booth, my phone is in my pocket, I can have a flash drive, I can have any number of things. They shut the screen and I now have physical access to this machine semi-privately.
Yeah.
There's no telling what I could do to that machine. If I have, any hacker will tell you that if you have physical access to the hardware, they can get into it.
But to get back to his point, yeah. The reason why they don't do that is the whole purpose behind electronic voting is to get instant results.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
if you keep them offline, then a lot of these claims of Russian hacking wouldn't be even plausible.
So why not just go back to paper voting?
Yeah.
Just a bunch of cards.
I wouldn't mind that.
Well, then we have the whole hanging chat issue.
which is where all the whole electronic voting thing, that's the genesis of that.
Well, we had a little hiccup technologically, so I think we're going to...
Said something about like a MIDI interference or something. It couldn't catch up with the audio.
So we're gonna end it there. I mean, it is over an hour.
So
we want to hear from you, our listeners. So please send us, you know, voicemail, an email, God forbid, video mail at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com, or visit our website at www.gizmosapiens.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.